This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. When Juan Guaido took the oath of office as would-be interim president of Venezuela last week, he held a copy of the Venezuelan Constitution adorned with a portrait of Simón Bolívar. Known as El Libertador, the Liberator, Bolívar had a vision of a united South America.
Levantemos la mano derecha.
When former President Hugo Chávez was in power, he renamed the country the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela and sang on television after exhuming Bolívar's remains.
Simón Bolívar, Simón, caraqueño americano.
In high school history textbooks, Bolívar is usually referred to as the George Washington of Latin America, which might be selling him short. He freed no fewer than 6 countries from the oppression of Spanish colonial rule in the early 19th century, and for good measure, he worked to abolish slavery decades before we did.
Bolivar's military action lasted more than twice as long as North America's.
Marie Arana is the author of Bolivar, American Liberator. This is from her TED Talk.
The territory that he covered was 7 times as large and spanned an astonishing geographic diversity, from crocodile-infested jungles to the snow-capped Andes. Moreover, Bolivar's war could not have been won without the aid of Black and Indian troops. His success in rallying Blacks and Indians to his cause marked the turning point of the revolution.
Bolivar was a Caracas-born aristocrat, educated in Europe and fluent in the teachings of the Enlightenment. He was also an exemplar both of political vision and of paradox. For instance, he was disgusted by slavery in the U.S. and dismissive about fixation on race, but also highly wary of surrendering too much political power to the indigenous and Black majority, for fear of having popular revolutions topple his revolutions. He gave himself the title Liberator and Dictator, which is evidence as good as any that his legacy is ambiguous, even for those who now claim to represent it. Miguel Tinker Salas is a Venezuelan historian and professor at Pomona College. He says there are 2 Bolivars, the elite statesman and the man of the people.
He's a powerful figure that is brought back into the forefront by the latter part of the 19th century as a symbolic figure, unfortunately as the elite Bolívar, as the statesman Bolívar, to help consolidate the nation, searching for national symbols. And that's the role he began to play. That official Bolívar always coexisted side by side with another Bolívar, a popular Bolívar, a Bolívar that was identified by the social movements, by people of color, by others who looked in his writings about empire and about the U.S.'s efforts at reconquering Latin America. So these 2 Bolívars coexisted in Venezuela throughout the 20th century. The elites promoting one vision of this statesman Bolívar and the other captured in music and song and poetry as a potent symbol for political change.
The invocation of Bolívar by various constituencies reminds me a little bit of scripture. Depending on your worldview, your religious philosophy, you can make a given passage stand for your views, or somebody can make an adjacent passage stand for the opposite.
Yeah, no doubt. I've always said that quoting Bolívar tells us more about the person that is quoting Bolívar than it does about Bolívar. He cannot be simplified as a radical, as a Democrat, as a dictator, as a caudillo, military strongman. He is a very complex figure. He was complex on questions of race. He wanted to incorporate people of color, but then he also tried a commander who rejected one of his orders and had him executed as a message to Afro-Venezuelans about any potential race-based rebellion. So here's a controversial figure.
Let's not move past that execution too quickly, because it seemed to stand for his general misgivings about democracy, did it not? That he was concerned that the ethnic majorities of Latin America, given too much power, could lead still more revolutions against the governing elites.
Haiti is in the background of all the independence leaders in Latin America. They saw what happened with the oppression of slaves and the oppression of people of color, and then their rebellion against the French colonial rule, one of the most profitable colonies in all of the Caribbean. So that's always in the background. But he's also a bit worried about how this democracy is going to take root. After all, there is nothing to unify the country. The country had been a colony. It had not been a country. There wasn't national symbols. There wasn't even loyalty to a capital city. As soon as Caracas declares independence, the other provinces are pulling in the opposite direction, since there's very little faith that a concept such as democracy, which had not been practiced in Venezuela or any other colonial entity, can somehow bring this together. So he made a statement that trying to promote democracy was akin to plowing the ocean in Latin America.
So he is una paradoja. That's me speaking Spanish.
Yes. He is a paradox, but whose vision was interpreted as an unfinished vision for Latin America and for Venezuela. And that's where you have Hugo Chavez coming into the picture, to take that other Bolívar, that other image, and to promote his project as part of Bolívar's unfinished business.
You spoke of Bolívar as a visionary. Well, you can say that again. He really hearted George Washington, and George Washington really hearted him. But Bolívar was also quoted as saying about the United States that it, quote, appeared destined to plague Latin America with misery in the name of liberty, which is about as dead on as can be.
And that quote is adorned on walls throughout Latin America, and especially in Venezuela. Not everyone reads Bolívar, but everyone knows anecdotally some of his sayings, some of his proclamations, some of his ideals. So you have the larger symbolic Bolívar as the shadow over much of this process. One that, again, differences have been drawn between what was the elite Bolívar and how he was represented, and the people's Bolívar, or the popular Bolívar. And there's a very interesting song in Venezuela by a singer named Ali Primera. It's called Canción Bolivariana, the Bolivarian song, in which Bolívar is having a conversation with a young boy. And Bolívar says, look, the elites are going to my grave to pay homage to me. And the young boy says, no, Bolívar.
Asegurarse de que estés bien muerto, libertador. Bien muerto.
They're going to make sure you're dead, so that you do not return.
He's been dead for about 185 years. He has not rested in peace. He had been exhumed.
Well, he doesn't die in Venezuela. He's exiled to Colombia. So it takes quite some time to bring his bones back to Venezuela. They're brought back and they're put in a tomb with other family bones. In 1945, when there's a democratic interregnum in Venezuela, the government convenes a committee to determine the bones of Bolívar and to actually unearth the casket, open it, and examine it. And there's actually a convocation sent to the other Bolivarian republics of Latin America to tell them this is happening.
And then, as mentioned in the introduction, in 2010, Chavez did it too.
Chavez argued that it was an effort to develop a more realistic image of Bolívar by digital imaging, and also to determine if Bolívar had been poisoned, because there was always this mythology that Bolívar had been poisoned by his enemies. In the end, after the casket had been opened and the imaging done, what emerged was a much swarthier image of Bolívar that then was used to adorn government buildings throughout Venezuela. It's interesting because for many in the poor sectors of Venezuela, while the elites and others may have been mocking the opening of the casket, others actually, and I saw them cry. It was the first time they had seen in human form the remains of El Libertador, the liberator.
The Venezuelan author Alberto Barrera wrote a column in the New York Times in Spanish, observing that far from unifying Venezuela, the cult, as he phrased it, of Simón Bolívar now is tearing the country apart. Is he more divisive at this point than unifying?
It's interesting you would raise that. I would have said for the opposition, he is divisive because of the Chavez appropriation of Bolívar. And in fact, that article by Tarre cites several historians have written essays as to why they are not Bolivarian, except that now with Juan Guaido, we have him using the symbol of Bolívar on the constitution that he swore his self-proclaimed presidency. What is he attempting to do? I don't think that appeals the same way to the middle class and upper classes who may have supported him. Was he making an effort to reach other classes? It's unclear at this point, but it's obvious that he was making use of that symbol. In the past, Bolívar would have been seen as appropriated by the Chavistas and not promoted. When the National Assembly is taken by the opposition in 2015 and they are inaugurated in 2016, one of the first things they do is take down the images of Chavez and of Bolívar, so that they were trying to, quote unquote, cleanse the space of these previous influences.
I have one final question for you. What would you do? How would you mediate this situation where two men and two factions are claiming the presidency?
I would start by going to the meeting on February 7th that Mexico and Uruguay have convened in Montevideo, because the only solution here is to find some level of negotiated, mediated solution. The real issue here is the social fabric in Venezuela. No matter who is in power, whether it's the opposition and its many factions, or whether it's the Chavistas and their many factions. Because the reality is, unless there's some kind of consensus on what is going to happen next and how both sides respect the political decision that is made, the reality is we'll be back to square one tomorrow. And it'll repeat and repeat because neither the Chavistas nor the opposition are going away.
Miguel, many thanks.
Thank you.
Miguel Tinker Salas is a Venezuelan historian and professor at Pomona College, author of Venezuela, What Everyone Needs to Know.